Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Supporters of Robert Smithson's monumental earthwork, the Spiral Jetty, are taking a three-pronged approach to preserve the piece. The Dia Art Foundation is teaming up with the Utah Museum of Fine Art at the University of Utah and the Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster College to ensure Spiral Jetty stays intact and available to more Utahns. And joining me now to talk about this unique alliance is Dr. Bonnie Baxter. She is a professor of biology and director of the Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster College. She joins me here in studio. And Dr. Baxter, thanks very much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
Also with us, Gretchen Dietrich. She is executive director of the Utah Museum of Fine Arts at the University of Utah. She's also vice chair of the Board of Trustees of the Utah Nonprofit Association and a board member of the State Office of Museum Services. And Gretchen, nice to have you here.
Hi, Jennifer.
Also with us, Philippe Verne. He is director of Dia Art Foundation, a nonprofit based in New York City which supports, presents, and preserves art projects. And Dia acquired the Spiral Jetty as a gift from the Robert Smithson Estate in 1999. And Philippe, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you. Good morning.
A panel discussion about the future of the Spiral Jetty is happening tonight at 7 o'clock in the main library auditorium at the City Library here on Library Square, 210 East 4th South in Salt Lake City. We'll have more information about that as we go. Later on in the program, trying to diffuse the public lands debate through storytelling. But first, the Spiral Jetty. Have you been to the jetty? What are your impressions of this landmark land art? And how do you think the earthwork should be preserved? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Before we get to the big picture partnership that you're all working on and involved with, I want to start with some detail about the artist, Robert Smithson. Gretchen, what can you tell us about Smithson as a person and an artist?
Well, I think Smithson is just a profoundly important American artist, and one that made work that had never been made before and thought about things in new ways, which is always hard to do and very important to do. And I think the Spiral Jetty is really one of his great masterworks, and it's just 2 hours north of us here in Salt Lake City, and some in our community know all about it and go all the time, and some in our community have never heard of it. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of an interesting issue. But Smithson died quite young, a few years after making Spiral Jetty in 1970, and but made an incredible body of work in his short life that still continues to be incredibly important to artists working today, and just really, really good stuff.
Was the bulk of his work in earthwork, or was it in other
many
objects?
Many different wonderful things, incredible drawings, which we'll show you tonight at the library. Wonderful, wonderful, and very important pieces of land art like Spiral Jetty that are out in the world, but also really important works of art, almost sculptures that he called non-sites, where he was really sort of carting in rocks and earth and minerals from the outside world into the gallery spaces. So there's this wonderful sort of art leaving the gallery, leaving the museum, going out into the natural world, but then at the same time those elements of the natural world being dragged into the gallery setting, and all of the sort of interesting questions that came with that important action. Mm-hmm. But Philippe would know lots more about
Philippe. So I was going to turn the discussion to you and just ask you the same question. Who was Smithson as an artist, and how did this partnership develop between Smithson and the Dia Foundation?
Well, everything, I'm not going to repeat everything Gretchen just said. He was an absolutely groundbreaking artist, and he was part of a generation of artists who have changed the language of art and the course of American art history for one few specific reasons. One of these reasons is that in the 60s, 70s, they started to think about art beyond the parameters of what museums or galleries, what the convention of art where and start to think beyond this convention and measure their work in front of a very in front of the American landscape and creating a new series of a new group of monuments. What was also extraordinary with Smithson is that he loved comic books and and science and science fiction, and he brought a totally different way of not only the location of art, but a different way to conceive of a work of art, bringing to art knowledge that before were not considered as being part of art history, and that today will help us understand better the way the artists of this time, this generation, the way they were working. And to your question, what are we trying to achieve through this collaboration? I think the group of people at the table, from a museum to a foundation in New York to the Great Salt Lake Institute, we can actually bring to the conversation around Smithson the different element that actually fed his own work.
Mm-hmm. So he had this fascination with science. Clearly, he was a visionary artist. Why did he select the site near Roselle Point on the northeastern shore of the Great Salt Lake? Did he have some sort of connection to Utah or to this body of water?
Brine shrimp.
Red water. Okay.
Red water. I mean, it's actually true. Water was very important. You were mentioning yesterday that he was teaching in a...
But not till after the jetty. So there's this really interesting connection of Smithson to Utah. And he had a visiting professorship in the College of School of Architecture, actually, in 1972. But he built the jetty in 70. I think sort of scouting this location for this particular work. And I always read, Philippe, that he was very interested in the brine shrimp and the red water, which Bonnie can tell you all about why that happened. But
if I just might interject,
sure.
It has nothing to do with brine shrimp. We'll get back to that.
Oh,
okay.
Dear.
Okay.
But I think he came to Utah. He built the jetty. Somehow managed to make this thing happen. In 1970, but then kept coming back and sort of was here. Gave a very important lecture called the Hotel Palenque, which I'll talk a little bit about tonight at a conference at the School of Architecture at the U, where he was meant to talk about my in architecture and ancient ruins, but he ended up speaking in a sort of rambling, brilliant, slightly inebriated way about an old tourist hotel that he and his wife Nancy Holt had visited in 1969. He was more interested in modern ruins than he was in ancient ruins, and I think everything that happened at Hotel Palenque and his sort of brief, maybe failed visiting professorship is all of those issues that are so Smithson are sort of all tied up in all of that in a really great way.
Gretchen Dietrich, she is Executive Director of the Utah Museum of Fine Arts at the University of Utah. Philippe Verne, Director of the DIA Art Foundation. And Dr. Bonnie Baxter, Professor of Biology and Director of the Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster College. We're talking about the spiral jetty and the upkeep and maintenance of that earthwork. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255 if you'd like to join our conversation. Bonnie Baxter, tell us why the water is pink. For a lot of people who have not been there, it is otherworldly. You see the lake, but there is a pinkish, reddish hue to it. What's going on there ecologically?
Well, I went to the jetty first in 1998, not to visit the spiral jetty, but to collect pink water because I was looking for microorganisms that might be able to handle large amounts of sunlight. And some evidence in the literature had pointed towards microbes that live in extreme environments. So I tried to find access to this crazy north arm of Great Salt Lake. I had just moved here, and I was driving all around the lake, and somebody said, well, you ought to take the road out to Spiral Jetty. And I said, what the heck is the Spiral Jetty? And it was 1998. So at that time, since the floods of the mid-80s, Spiral Jetty had been underwater. And I went out with students and canoes and canoed all around the North Arm looking for this mythical Spiral Jetty. and so I had to take people's word for it that it existed. So to stop that story but tell you why the water is pink, it is because of these microbes that live there in the high sunlight. They have pigments in their membranes that are called carotenoids, and that's named for carrots. So they're the same kind of pigments you see in fall leaves, the reds and the orange, or carrots or sweet potatoes. And our doctors tell us to eat lots of them because they're antioxidants. So these microbes have a lot of these pigments in their cell membrane, and it prevents damage in their extreme environment. So their DNA is protected. So I thought, oh, these must have some really cool secrets to learn about. So I started isolating these microbes out of the lake and started studying them. And turns out nobody had been doing that with Great Salt Lake since the mid-70s. And this work was completely just unstudied. And that led to my career in Great Salt Lake. And that led to the beginning of Great Salt Lake Institute. And it's been a phenomenal thing. So actually, why the water's pink is a big part of my career. which is why
let's not confuse it with brine shrimp.
Brine shrimp contribute no color to the water. You can see them discreetly. And some of them actually, when they're stressed, they do turn on their own carotenoid pathways and turn pink, but you can see them discreetly in the water. The water itself has these tiny microbes that make it pink. And I've read and a lot of what Philippe and Gretchen are saying, that Smithson was really looking for a site that had a contrast of, you know, the black rock and the red water and the white salt. And so that's the artist's vision of it. So I love the fact that I was drawn to this same element that Smithson was drawn to, but for a very different reason.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you mentioned, Bonnie, was that you could not see it when you went on your initial visit. And I'm wondering, the lake level has a lot to do with the visibility of the work. The high salt concentration has made the black rocks white. Do you think that Smithson, as the artist, he may have been looking for an extreme environment, but did he have any sense of how this earthwork would evolve? Philippe Verne?
Actually, I think, I was about to jump on that when Bonnie said that, the spiral, the jetty was nowhere to be seen. Mm-hmm. The fact that the level of water were, up and down, the fact that the spiral, the jetty would appear and disappear, the concentration of salt in the water, all of that informed Smithson's decision to locate the work there. When you look at his sculpture, the one he did, the non-site that Gretchen talked about, they all about the cycle of the matter, the process of crystallization. It's all over his work, whether he use mirror, sand, salt in some of the sculpture. So when the jetty is just of the water, it's white and totally crystallized. And that phenomenon, the passage of time through the phenomenon of crystallization, was totally part of, I believe, of what Smithson was looking for.
Mm-hmm. Gretchen Dietrich, do we have any sense of what it took to actually physically build this? I mean, it's massive. Was a construction crew up there hauling it out? Was it a low watered year? What do we know about the physical construction of the spiral jetty?
I think that it was quite an endeavor. And I think there are wonderful stories. There's a man named Bob Phillips who still lives in Utah, who was maybe about the same age as Smithson at the time. And somehow Robert Smithson convinced this construction worker, from Cache County to help him to do this and to bring the equipment that was needed, these huge bulldozers and other moving, earth moving equipment, out to this very remote part of the lake. And we actually have on our website some interviews with Bob and Hikmet Lowe and other people in our community who know a lot about the making of the jetty and what an enterprise that was, and what a wonderful conversation that must have been. Bob Smithson trying to convince this other man who was certainly not in the art world and certainly had never heard of this weird hippie guy dressed in black,
Come move some dirt for me in the Great Salt
Lake. Yeah, this is something that we need to do. And actually, Smithson really, my understanding is that they initially got quite far, and then Smithson said, no, stop, it's not right, and we need to kind of do it again.
Yeah, Bob says they have a pile of rocks. They move basalt to the center, right? There was a pile in the center of the jetty, and then you know, called these guys with the backhoes back to move.
Back.
Yeah, come back and move
but,
it out.
But I think, I mean, one thing when, you know, with Bonnie and Philippe were saying about, I think part of the coming and the going of the jetty, you know, the underwater, out of water, totally underwater, a little bit out of water, all of this over time. And of course, it was really not, you really weren't able to see it for many, many, many years after it was built. And I think that adds to the myth and magic and mystery surrounding this object for sure. But maybe Smithson as an artist as well. And, you know, we've done work at the museum sort of investigating that sort of myth-making of Robert Smithson and the jetty and sort of what he came to mean to other artists working, contemporary artists working in the 90s and the first part of this decade. But it also, you know, every time you go to Spiral Jetty, it's a completely different experience because sometimes it's covered with salt crystals. Sometimes the water is red. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes, you know, it is just such a magical experience. And it's different every single time. And I think that's really unique and really special about this object.
And we measure that scientifically, right? So we measure...
I just look at it and enjoy it.
I know, but we measure lake level. We measure the salinity at the time. We measure the dissolved oxygen. We measure the number of microbes per milliliter. We actually measure these differences and record them. And so we watch, actually, the genetic identity of the microbes around the jetty. We measure over time. So we've measured this scientifically in so many ways, and I just love the way that juxtaposed with the art and the excitement that came about in 2003 when it appeared from underwater after this, you know, successive years of drought. It comes out, and the excitement was not just in the artist community. I mean, I was writing grants about this great opportunity because the lake was drying up, and so I love that. The excitement that Smithson had for the changing cycles of the lake connects to this real nature, this real natural phenomenon of a terminal lake basin.
Mm-hmm. Bonnie Baxter, she's a professor of biology and director of the Great Salt Lake Institute. Also with us, Gretchen Dietrich. She is executive director of the UMFA, and Philippe Verne, director of the DIA Art Foundation. We're talking about the Spiral Jetty and the upkeep and maintenance of this premier art earthwork here in Utah. A panel discussion about the future of the jetty is happening tonight at 7 o'clock in the main library auditorium here on Library Square. More information is on our website, kcpw.org. If you have questions or comments about the new collaboration or just want to reminisce with us about your memories of the Spiral Jetty, you can give us a call. 801-355-8255 is our number, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. The Spiral Jetty gives new meaning to the word landmark, for its art has become a cherished part of the landscape. Three groups are coming together to ensure Robert Smithson's earthwork is preserved. How do you think the jetty's integrity and accessibility should be improved? A panel discussion about the future of the Spiral Jetty is happening tonight at 7 o'clock. We'll give you more details on that a bit later. But if you have questions or comments about the earthwork, the Spiral Jetty, 801-355-TALK is our number. With us in studio, Dr. Bonnie Baxter, professor of biology and director of the Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster College. Also with us, Gretchen Dietrich, executive director of the UMFA at the University of Utah, and Philippe Verne, director of DIA Art Foundation. 801-355-TALK is our number. And before the break, we were talking about some of the natural effects that happened to this work and Smithson's vision in seeing that it did change over time as the natural forces took over. Well, I suppose that presents a number of challenges to making sure that this work is preserved. What do we mean by preserved? Philippe Verne.
Well, that's why we're here, to figure it out. There are many reasons to preserve the work. There's many strategies to develop to preserve the work. I mean, from if we go back a few months ago, one of the reasons also we are here are the, I think it's interesting to go back to the circumstances that actually brought us to this collaboration was last June. The DIA Art Foundation enter in a conversation with the Department of Natural Resources.
And you lease the land that the artwork is
land,
on
We
from
lease
them.
The land from the Department of Natural Resources. Mm-hmm. And as we were in conversation with the team of Dick Bueller, who's the head of the Department of Natural Resources team.
The Forestry Fire State Lands
I'm
Division.
Sorry.
The Forestry Fire State Lands Division, right?
Yes.
Yep.
I think both the two organizations understood that they didn't know much about each other and that we're living in polite ignorance of each other, which was not good. And so we came together, we had a meeting, and I remember Mr. Bueller explaining, you know, their mission and what they were doing with the land, with this magnificent and gigantic amount of land that they have to administer, and how could they understand better, or could they be with the as a steward of this magnificent sculpture? Mm-hmm. And then we did the same thing. We explained them, well, this is what the DIA Foundation is, and I don't think any of us had, you know, an understanding of what were our roles and how we can work together better to preserve, to maintain the sculpture. So that's the first, and from us, this conversation around a purely administrative detail became the
first.
But
it's not a term of your lease. The state didn't come in heavy-handed and said, you need to have a local presence.
No, but what we learned from this conversation is we didn't have a local presence. And by not having a local presence, we didn't really, to be totally transparent, we didn't really understand the context within we were dealing with Spiral Jetty. You know, we're in New York, we're a few miles away from the Great Salt Lake, but there is a cultural gap between the two organizations and the two locations. And that this conversation for me was extremely important. And mm-hmm. then through the conversation, we also, I think both, it came spontaneously in the conversation between the Department and of Natural Resources and DIA that we needed to find way to be more present. And you know, life is short. You want to work with people you appreciate. Mm-hmm. And the two obvious partner for us to work with were the museum, because we knew each other, because the museum has work in its collection, fantastic work by Robert Smithson, because the museum organized a few years ago this very important exhibition called the Smithson Effect, about the legacy of Smithson for a younger generation of artists, and Bunny, because we knew that her organization was going there on a regular basis, way more regularly than we were going, to study the environment around the jetty. So you know, it's actually, you know, it's a threesome partnership.
It's a triumvirate.
But I think it's a foursome, because I think the Department of Natural Resources,
right,
and then their knowledge of the ground is also extremely important. Mm-hmm. And that, in terms of, you know, to answer your question, how do we maintain Spiral Jetty? That's the first step. Mm-hmm. And maybe the most important one so far.
Mm-hmm. Bonnie Baxter, how do you envision the Great Salt Lake Institute helping to monitor, to observe to the changes that are going around the Spiral Jetty?
Well, one of the things in our memorandum of understanding with DIA, one of, you know, the signed agreement that we agree to do is really just sort of these physical things of monitoring the site, letting them know if there's, you know, graffiti, if the signs are down, if the road conditions are bad. Unfortunately, a lot of that was left to the National Park Service at Golden Spike. I think for years they've been the unofficial people who've had to rescue vehicles that have gotten stuck, or I'm not sure that's ever part of their job description, right? And Box Elder County maintains the roads, and you know, DIA is in New York. They they can't really connect to the National Park Service site out at Golden Spike or Box Elder County with the roads or this sign is down, what do we do about it? Because they're not coming that often. So I think that that sort of physical presence is important.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, particularly in the spring and summer, you know, we might be up there two or three times a month, and we take people there. We take our undergraduate students. We take collaborators from all over the world. I took 40 international scientists there one time for an entire day. We were doing science, but you can't think that they don't get impacted by seeing the spiral jetty, right? So we take school kids there. We got stuck overnight there one time with high school kids at a summer camp. I'm not proud to admit that, but we didn't lose any of them. And they spent a lot of quality time with the spiral jetty. So we bring people of Utah and elsewhere to that site and allow them to interact with the jetty. And I think to formalize that more is incredible. It's an incredible opportunity. And to have the people that I can contact when I have questions about Smithson or the jetty, or this question came up, you know, this person wants to know this. And I guess the last way is I hope that Gretchen and I can help Dia in forming a stronger local network together, and that means Great Salt Lake Institute and UMFA need to work together. Maybe we have future educational programming around the jetty, and we do the field site part, and she does the art education part. And I'm just so excited about the opportunity to collaborate with these folks.
Mm-hmm. Gretchen Dietrich, what is your role? What is the UMFA's part in this three-pronged partnership?
Well, I think I too am really excited about the possibilities. I think that are in the future, and I think it's wholly appropriate that the Utah Museum of Fine Arts is one of the entities at this table, because we are the state's art museum, and we are we work hard to provide cultural leadership to our community here, and this is really our great artwork. And so we're really, and as Philippe has said, we have recently been working harder to create opportunities for dialogue and research and scholarship and contemplation about the jetty, about Robert Smithson, about his impact on our arts community, on our cultural community. We've begun to really aggressively collect works of art by Smithson, which I'm going to talk about a little bit tonight, which is not so easy to do, by the way. And we've begun to collect works by contemporary artists for whom Smithson was very, very influential and very important. And I think that's another great way that we can sort of add to our collection and add to our local understanding of the jetty and of Smithson as well. And I also think because we sit, like Bonnie, we sit on a campus, we are really a gateway for the broader community which we serve. We're sort of Utah State Museum, but we're also a university art museum. We're a gateway for that kind of dialogue and for connecting the broader community to the incredible research and study that's happening at the University of Utah, both in the sciences and the humanities and art history, maybe especially. And I'm just really excited about the whole thing. It's a great idea and a great opportunity for us, and we're pleased to be a part of it.
This email from William, who writes, could you ask if... I guess that he's directing this to you, Bonnie. If you know when the best time of the year to view the water in the jetty area is at its reddest, does it change with the seasons, the amount of rainfall, et cetera? This is from William. Thanks for the email, Bonnie Baxter.
Oh, that's a fantastic question. So what you're actually asking is, when are the microbes sort of enriched and doing the best? And most of the microbes that we isolate from the lake actually grow better in the lab at our body temperature, 98.6 Fahrenheit, or we would call that 37 degrees centigrade. And in at that temperature, then that's really warm summer temperature. So if you go in June, July, August, even up until October, when things are really dry by October, that's the low point of the lake, you see the reddest colors. But in May, there's a bloom of a particular species of algae called Denaliella salina that only lives at this incredible salt concentration. It's like 30% salt that time of year. The ocean is 3.4%, if that gives you
wow.
any guideline on understanding what 30% means. So This is an algae that can grow at that temperature, and it blooms at the end of May, and it's kind of a brilliant orange color. So if you're looking for that bright orange color of Denaliella, then I would say go late May, early June. If you're looking for a more purplish pink color, that comes from a species called Halobacterium, and that occurs more towards July. Hmm. So it changes, which is really amazing. So there's just this watercolor palette throughout the summer. But definitely the lower the water, the higher the salt concentration, the better these organisms do. And the warmer the water, the higher their level of cell division. So there's going to be more of them. So based on the biology, I would say summer.
Okay, there's your answer, William. Thanks very much for that question. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. This question, Philippe, is directed to you. You maintain many long-term art pieces, ranging from New York to New Mexico to here in Utah, the Spiral Jetty. Is there anything that makes the Spiral Jetty unique in the maintenance that you have of these different art installations? Anything else like this in the world?
No, there is nothing like that in the world. And that's one of the reasons the Smithson Estate made this gift to the DIA Art Foundation in 1990. The DIA, as you just said, has been managing land project a little bit all over the country and in New York. The specificity of Spiral Jetty is actually it is out there in nature that everybody can go. The other project that DIA runs, you know, whether it's the lightning field in New Mexico. It's you have a visitation protocol. We have a team of people that hold your hand and help you access the work. Spiral Jetty has become part of nature. It's totally open. That also adds to the complexity of the way the DIA Art Foundation should be the steward of this work, because we're not going to build a little visitor center there. That would be totally counterintuitive and against the integrity of Smithson's vision mm-hmm. For the work. So we have to find strategy that would allow us to keep, a loving eye on the sculpture, and at the same time respect the parameters and the vision of Robert Smithson. And going in the way of his vision, you have many, you have few threats. You have the man-made pollution, and you have the nature-made erosion, and we have to dance a balancing act between those two, and that's very unique to the situation of his sculpture. Selfishly, that there is nothing like that in the world, I have to be a little bit less arrogant here. If you go outside of Las Vegas, you can go see Michael Heiser Double Negative, which is also a fantastic work of earth land art. You can go see Nancy Holt, who was a Smithson widow, not too far from Spiral Jetty. So the very uniqueness of the JT for us, it's also that the what the JT brings to knowledge, culture, and education, because it's a little bit like with any painting or any sculpture in the museum, you respect it when you start to understand it, and the more you educate around a work of art, the more respect the work of art will benefit. And what we're doing here with Gretchen and Bonnie is actually going in this direction. That I think the first urgency for the maintenance of the sculpture is to work in such a way that people will understand what it means for science, for art history, for environment.
Mm-hmm. I guess that leads into my final question. Our time is short, but when you rope in some local partners, you're undoubtedly going to raise the visibility of this piece. And I think it's no mistake that Robert Smithson picked this very remote, not easily accessed place to put this piece. Do you have any fears or concerns that this is going to become, you know, a huge tourist attraction and that that additional traffic may in some ways impact negatively on the artwork? Who wants to take that one?
Well, you know, Smithson is an artist, and artists want their work to be seen. Also, one of the reason we're here is actually to answer this question and learn to answer this question as we go. I think our priority is to maintain the integrity of Smithson vision. If, you know, we, and I hope that we'll benefit more visitation, and then we'll have to make sure that the visitation are organized around, you know, the parameter that Smithson would have loved.
Very quickly, Bonnie.
I just want to say that I think raising the visibility can have the opposite impact, because you can create a community of stewards who really can help care for the art. And maybe less likely to be participating in anything that hurts the artwork.
Mm-hmm. And Gretchen?
I just think it's something that, as Utahns, we should be very proud of. And I know that there is a bit of skepticism in the community about some pile of rocks out in the middle of nowhere, but I would say that people who say that have never been there. So you have to go and see, and then I think you will understand. And I think it's really special.
Gretchen Dietrich, she is Executive Director of the UMFA at the University of Utah. Gretchen, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Also, Bonnie Baxter from the Great Salt Lake Institute at Westminster College. Bonnie, thanks to you.
Thanks for having us.
And Philippe Verne, director of DIA Art Foundation, a nonprofit based in New York City. And Philippe, thanks to you.
Thank you very much.
A panel discussion about the future of the Spiral Jetty is happening tonight at 7 o'clock in the main library here on Library Square. More information is on our website, kcpw.org. Coming up next, finding common ground in the public lands debate. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City.